God bless the internet. It's the Gadget Grill on to RDJ FM 88.1 on the FM band and on the internet. We are at www.radio2rdj.com. Hello there. I am sitting in the driver's seat. I am the Professor Stumpy Steamboat Gaz. Sitting in the passenger seat is a very, very nervous passenger, is none other than...
but very terrified Alex Harosh.
Indeed. Good evening. Hello, everybody. Alex, how are you tonight, today? What have you been up to, mate?
Not much today, but we had Tech Journalism's Night of Night on Friday night.
I was unable to attend. Tell the listener all about it. What was it, first of all?
So every year, the Australian Tech Journal community gets together to get drunk, pretty much.
That's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah, but...
which is unusual for journalists to get drunk, isn't it?
Really?
I've never seen a sober journalist, actually.
Hide the flask.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So there were some awards. I saw that Mark Pesce got an award. I saw quite a few people, well-deserved awards.
It's always a fun night.
It is a fun night. Unfortunately, I was unable to attend this year, but you were there. Was Jason there?
Yes, Jason was there.
Was he on his best behaviour?
Oh, you know Jason, always.
So that's a no. Okay. Now, I believe that you got a special mention.
I did. I managed to pick up a highly commended in the best reviewer category.
That's very good. You know, the Gadget Grill's picked up a couple of highly commendeds in the years gone by.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It is indeed. Congratulations, though.
Oh, thank you so much.
It is, very well deserved. I like your work.
Oh, thank you, Gary.
If I didn't like your work, I wouldn't be paying you what you're getting paid.
Oh, no, I'd be paying you then.
Well, you mean you're not? Hang on, let me check the accounts again. Jason is not with us today. He is somewhere in the air, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, on a plane to Paris.
On a plane to Paris. I should play a Paris song, shouldn't I?
When he gets back.
Okay, I'll play a Paris song for him when he gets back. I can find some Paris music.
Excellent. But you know, Jason's off to see a man about a phone.
What a surprise that is.
And Huawei is unveiling the P20 in Paris this week, which is their next flagship smartphone. So we'll have more news when, I guess, Jason is back.
Right. Some Jimmy Buffett would be good. Jimmy Buffett does a Paris song, I think. Let me see if I can find it. There we are. He went to Paris. Oh, that's perfect for Jason. He went to Paris. That would be perfect. I got John English, Nights in Paris. And we've got April in Paris. Lots of people doing that. That's an old jazz standard, and it's a beautiful piece of music.
We're a couple of days too early for that.
We are indeed. We are indeed, actually, yes. Next Sunday, I can play April in Paris. I can play He Went. I can find some Paris music for Jason. Midnight, Memphis Slim and Canned Heat. Ooh, that would be good. Yes. Okay.
Well, maybe we should play some music.
You want to play some music? Okay, we'll play some music. I thought I'd start tonight with a little bit of a wonderful composer who's in the process this year of wonderful composer. I love his work. Good actor, wonderful singer, but he's an acquired taste. And this is one of my two favourite pieces of his. He's re-releasing all of his early work this year. So that's going to be some awesome stuff. If you don't already have any Tom Waits, look for the re-releases that are just coming out as we speak. But I'm going to play a track called Jersey Girl, which is a beautiful piece of music.
You're listening to The Gadget Grill on Radio 2RDJ, 88.1 on the FM band and radio2rdj.com on the web.
Indeed you are. And it is time now for the news. And one of the best pieces of news that I got this week was about private keys on Ledger brand hardware wallets. And for years, executives at France-based Ledger, they've been saying that their specialised hardware for storing cryptocurrencies is very securely designed, and that resellers or others in the supply chain can't tamper with the devices without it being painfully obvious to end users.
I know where this is going.
You know exactly where this is going, because as soon as you say something is tamper-proof and foolproof and utterly secure, guess what happens? A 15-year-old kid comes along and backdoors the thing.
Of course the kid was 15.
Of course. And, you know, this is a kid in England. He demonstrated proof of concept code that allowed him to backdoor the Ledger Nano S. This is a $100 hardware wallet that the they've sold by the millions. And he's developed code that is 300 bytes long and causes the device to generate predetermined wallet addresses and recovery passwords known to the attacker.
Wow.
Isn't that beautiful? Please, people, if you design a device and you think it is tamper-proof, that it is totally secure and will never be broken, never say that, because as soon as you do, that becomes a challenge.
Exactly, exactly.
That becomes a challenge, and away you go. What have you got, Alex?
So a little bit closer to home, it's our favourite subject, the National Broadband Network,
the National Beanbag Network, yes.
So we actually have some positive NBN news this week.
Oh, okay, this will be good.
Yeah, so Australian provider Aussie Broadband has, I guess, taken unprecedented steps towards transparency, and is now publishing its network traffic levels across all 121 NBN points of interconnect. So you can look up the point of interconnect in your suburb, which is where the NBN connects to the wider internet,
right?
And see how much capacity Aussie Broadband has purchased, which is CBC, which is the
which is their backbone.
Yeah, which is
well they're interconnect to the NBN.
Kind of. Yeah, the CVC is the amount of capacity that they have for all their users on the NBN.
Sure.
So, and then you can see the last 24 hours and see how much of that capacity has been used.
Right.
Which is, this is part of their congestion-free network promise. So
Check it on a weekend, check it, you know, on a Saturday morning to see what Friday night was like, check it on a Sunday morning to see what Saturday night and afternoon was like.
Precisely. And, you know, for a long time, a lot of NBN providers have said, no, it's too much effort to publish this kind of information.
Oops.
So it's a really, like, good step forward for the industry, and hopefully it leads to more ISPs doing the same in terms of, like...
You know, I've developed a totally foolproof, uncrackable, secure wallet. Comes under the same boat as that, doesn't it, pretty much?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, that is good news, because it'll gives us greater transparency into what our providers are telling us. And if you look at different providers, then you can see what spare capacity they have. Mm. And the ones who have got spare capacity are the ones who are likely to give you
a better service,
a better experience on the NBN. That's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, especially because one of the big problems with the NBN is congestion.
Yes.
And it has been getting better. So let's just hope it continues.
Right. Okay. No, I'm not going to do that story yet. I'm going to do... Oh, yes, this one is interesting. Because one of the big stories from technology this week was the very, very sad accident in Arizona with the Uber self-driving car.
Mm.
And I don't know, have you seen the video of the accident yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, they've released the video of the accident.
Oh, I don't want to watch that.
And the lady appears in the... It happened at night, and the lady was wheeling a bicycle across the path of the Uber vehicle, and you only see her in the last second. And so if this was anybody driving a vehicle, based on the video that we saw, then there is no way that a human driver could have reacted to prevent the accident.
Mm.
Of course, now we're talking about self-driving vehicles, and the technology in the self-driving vehicles is supposed to be able to help prevent these types of incidents occurring. Now, there's a couple of things that are evident here, of course. Obviously, the technology failed for some reason, and my understanding is that the technology sensed the lady there, but it saw her with a bicycle, and again, this is my understanding from what I've seen so far. It determined that she was riding her bicycle in the same direction of travel as the vehicle, and therefore determined that there was no imminent danger of any type. Was found to be very wrong. The guy who was in charge of the vehicle, they got video of him as well on there, and he really is quite remiss, because he's supposed to be there with his hands above the wheel, ready to take over the vehicle at any time. And he's there looking down, it looks like he might be checking a phone or something like that, but he, to my mind, what I've seen in the video is that he doesn't appear to be paying attention to what's happening on the road until the very last moment.
Yeah.
And that doesn't augur well for at least this individual. From what I've seen on the video.
Because if he's looking after the car, it's his responsibility.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, there's one other interesting story that has come out of this as well, because there's an article that I saw the other day in the New York Times, and this said that as of March, Uber has a target of 13 miles per human intervention in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that the person has to take over once every 13 miles to take control of the vehicle in terms of looking after the self-driving capacity of the vehicle. Now, does that sound like a lot or not a lot to you, once every 13 miles?
It sounds like a medium amount.
Okay. Waymo, which is the Google self-driving car project, in tests on roads in California last year, they went an average of nearly 5,600 miles between human interventions.
Wow, okay. Yeah, that really puts into perspective.
That does put it into perspective, doesn't it? And the Uber, 13 miles, compare that to 5,600 miles.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That is absolutely crazy. And given the problems that Uber's been facing in the last 12, 18 months with the culture of the organisation, they've actually moved a lot of their testing into Arizona, where the rules are a lot less strict than mm-hmm. they are in California. So this is going to be very interesting as the investigations into the accident continue and things become a little bit clearer.
Mm.
It's a very, very sad story, but I think there's a lot of interest in it, because self-driving cars, whether we like it or not...
They're coming.
They're coming. They're the future. Well, they're here. They're here. They're talking about around the airport in Adelaide. They're going to have them. They're going to have self-driving buses in Perth in the not-too-distant future. They're talking about that.
Oh, wow.
So they're talking about self-driving buses down Parramatta Road with guidance. Bless you. With guidance systems on the road, and the buses will follow these lines on the roadway down mm-hmm. Parramatta Road around Concord Croydon, basically just down the road from us here. They'll be operating there. So this is all getting very, very interesting, and you get the combination of self-driving vehicles and electric vehicles, and it changes quite radically the whole concept of how we're going to be getting around in the next 20 and 30 years, I think.
Mm.
Of course, it's going to upset me, because I enjoy driving my car.
Maybe there'll still be like a racetrack you can take it down onto for a bit of that.
Oh, there's a few of those still around.
So Huawei is not the only company making an announcement this week. Apple's got a product launch scheduled for Wednesday morning.
This is in Chicago?
Yes, in Chicago. It's an education-focused event, and the rumors appear to be, or seem to suggest, that Apple will be unveiling a cheaper iPad. That's what wireless designed for the education market.
Right.
Will, you know, be available to...
So it'll be, what, Wi-Fi only, possibly?
You know, there might be a 4G variant as well, but right. I don't think there's been an iPad that Apple's released that you haven't been able to get as a 4G model.
True, true.
But one of the interesting rumors is that, it could start at as little as $260, which is about...
320, 330 Australian.
Is it a little bit? I'm not sure.
By the time you pay the Australia tax, it'll be about 700, yeah.
But, you know, there's apparently going to be education-focused software, and it looks like it will also support the smart keyboard and the stylus, which is something that Apple's been resistant to in its cheaper iPads to date. So that could be an interesting move forward in terms of really pushing iPads as laptop replacements.
Indeed.
Especially at that kind of price.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll know more about it, of course, on Wednesday morning, our time. But it'll be interesting to see what sort of grunt this will have. Because if it's aimed at the education market, then perhaps it's not aimed as a content creation machine, and therefore it won't require the sort of power that...
in the current iPad Pros?
Yeah.
Because are beastly in terms of... computing power on an iPad Pro is actually, like, unreal. I was using some photo editing software on it.
Right.
And you can, like, pretty much draw, like, a rough outline around a face, and it will just strip out the background behind it, like, almost instantly. You know, that used...
Will it make me look good?
You really look great, Gary.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay, that sounds interesting. Amazon have been issued a patent for delivery drones that can react to flapping arms, so that if, for instance, the drone senses that you're on the ground and waving it away, it can react to that. And it can react to voice commands from people on the ground. So that as it's delivering a product to you, you can... Well, it might be a product that's meant for your next-door neighbour or something, and you can wave it away. Or you can wave it to, to say, OK, land over here or something like that. Or it might sense that there's danger there, and it can just simply release the product that it's delivering for you. So it can just release it, say, onto your back lawn, or maybe onto the footpath on the back where it'll... drop and smash in a screaming heap, smash to smithereens, because it's a very, very fragile piece of, Venetian crystal, say, Venetian glass. This sounds like a very interesting patent to be able to sense this sort of thing.
It'd be really interesting to see how they just deal with it and random interference, because from strangers.
Yeah.
Because you don't want just anyone be able to command a drone.
That's right. That's right, because the drone is intended, the delivery drone, well, hell, it's intended to be to deliver a product to a particular address. And they still haven't quite got that right, but they're getting there. And I'm not talking about the drones, I'm just talking about mapping and getting addresses right. And, of course, I'm still curious as to how these delivery drones are going to navigate things like the row of telegraph poles with wires on them outside your house. Because... I don't know how they're going to do that, and that's going to be an interesting concept as well. That's where some of the AI, I guess, comes into it, Alex.
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
We shall indeed.
Just don't order anything by for drone delivery.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'll be waiting.
Yes. Next story, please, Mr. Horace.
So the ACCC put out a new report this week that's... saying that Australians are now paying less for mobile phones and internet. Apparently, mobile service prices have fallen by about 7.1% each year between 2014 and 2017.
Well, we kind of touched on this subject last week when we were talking about Vodafone's new pricing structure as well.
Mm. And fixed internet prices fell by an average of 4.5% during the same period.
Okay.
So
this is a good thing.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's nice to talk about good news.
It is indeed. Now, talking of good news, one of the problems with the technology industry, and I work very deeply in the technology industry as a software developer, and I'm working with all sorts of people of varying capacities, mm-hmm. and some of them are very good, some of them are very not so good. And
okay, I'll leave then.
It's there's a lot of people of mixed gender and people, you know, sort of, some of them are very good at development. You've got to have the right mindset for software development. You've got to have the right sort of brain to work in the technology industry, mm-hmm. particularly in the leading edge of technology. So there was a survey done recently because there's a problem with gender equality within the technology industry. How many females do you know in development, actually actively doing development?
I don't know too many developers, to be honest, so...
Okay. Let me assure you that most of the developers that I know, it's a lot of males.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of males. So there was a survey done recently to find out how many people knew the names of female tech leaders. Now, you got... there's a few of them around. The head of Microsoft in Australia is a female, of course, as you know. And mm-hmm. This is the second female tech leader in Microsoft in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, sort of female technology leaders in a lot of different places. But when they asked the public to name some women tech leaders, they came up with names like Alexa and Siri.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
But it's...
I thought that was rather sad.
Not great.
Rather sad. That's how people perceive the technology industry, I'm afraid.
On that note, let's go to a song. I just can't even deal anymore.
I think we should go with a song on this one. And this is Old 55 and On the Prowl.
Well, I've been waiting, and it's a Saturday night. And I call up the boys, who will be cruising tonight. They got a party on, and they say it's gonna be alright. Well, we park the Custer on somebody's front lawn. And the boys and I, we sneak in the back door.
And welcome back to the Gadget Grill on 2RDJ FM 88 on 88.1 on the FM band, and we are on the internet at www.radio2rdj.com. It is time for us to talk about a phone. We're going to talk about the HTC U11 Life. I've had one. I've been playing with it for the last couple of weeks. Alex, you've had one that you picked up in Barcelona.
Oh, no, I didn't pick it up in Barcelona. I got it about the week after I got back.
Oh, okay. So you got yours about the same time I got mine?
Yes.
Okay. What did you think of it?
Well, shall we talk about what it is first?
Okay.
Let's
talk about what it is. It is, I think, on the Australian market, is it the first Google...
Android One smartphone?
Yes.
So HTC kind of pitched it as their affordable version of last year's flagship, the HTC U11. I don't know why it's where life comes from, but let's not ask too many questions.
Right, okay.
So, you know, it looks similar. Rather than having a glass back, it's a polished acrylic. So it still picks up quite a few fingerprints, but it's less fragile and doesn't feel quite as premium. But that's also because it comes in at $599 rather than $999.
In actual fact, you say that it doesn't feel quite as premium, but the feeling to me, I thought it actually felt a little bit better in my hand than the standard U11. I liked it a little bit better for that. It wasn't as slippery, wasn't as willing to fall off tables and stuff.
Yeah, well, I guess that is one of the benefits of plastic. But, like, it also just feels like a little bit lighter and a little bit...
In the hand, to me, it felt wonderful. I liked it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. It works as a phone. It makes phone calls, it takes photos, the camera's quite good.
Yeah,
For the price, particularly.
And it even does a decent job at low light. Like,
yes.
Not amazing. You know, you will get motion blur if your subject is moving, but it can take a nice photo at night, which is rare for phones at this price point.
Yeah. One of the things that I did find, and this is probably because it also shares the a lot of the hardware with the U11. With the U11, you may recall I commented that in my car, going through the Bluetooth, through the car system, the car audio system, mm-hmm. the audio was a little bit quieter than what I'm used to on some other phones. That was the case with the U11, and that is also true with the U11 Lite.
Mm-hmm.
With the top up, when, you know, sort of in an ordinary car, with sort of fully enclosed and so on, I don't think it would be a problem. My car, of course, is a convertible, and when I'm driving with the top down, I get a lot more extraneous noise coming in. And
well, whose fault is that, Gary?
I know. It's my fault. It is, excuse me. It is my fault entirely. But I did find that I had to listen more closely because at maximum volume, it still wasn't quite where I needed it mm-hmm. for that car. So if you've got a convertible, then maybe this isn't the phone for you. But otherwise, it was quite usable.
So Android One is a pure version... Bless you, Gary. So Android One is a pure version of Android that's maintained by, well, mostly maintained by Google.
Yes.
So it's completely no extra apps. It's just stock Android. And the important thing is that you're guaranteed 2 years of security updates and two major operating system updates. Sorry, 3 years of security updates and two major operating system updates. So you actually will get patches as Google rolls them out for
and the
pricier phones like the Pixels.
The other point that that leads to, of course, is that it has a lot less... crapware installed.
In fact, it has none.
Yep. And so that means that when you're loading stuff in, when you're setting up the phone for yourself, you've got to install a couple of things that you might want yourself. So you've got to go into the Play Store to download and install things yourself. But it means that the memory that you've paid for is available for you to use, not for some marketing person who's made a deal with ABC widget company, and they've put 3,000 widgets on there that take up 90% of the memory on the machine, and you can't install a bloody thing.
Yeah, well, you don't have to uninstall anything, and it helps make the phone feel a little bit faster, which is useful when because it does have a mid-range processor.
Yeah, it felt very responsive. The screen felt very responsive. It felt like much higher quality than much higher quality hardware than the price point suggests.
Yeah, and there's a few nice bonus features. Like you get a pair of noise-canceling earbuds in the box. So, you know, they're earbuds rather than headphones. So there is a limit to how much noise they will block out. And it's also water-resistant, which is... still quite rare at a $600 price point.
It is indeed. It is indeed. That's the HTC U11 Lite, and it's running Android One. This is a guy called Bob Hudson, and the band played Waltzing Matilda.
When I was a young man, I carried a pack, and I lived the free life of the rover. Murray's green basin to the dusty outback, I waltzed my Matilda on over. Then in 1915 the country said, son, it's time to stop roving, there's work to be done. And they gave me a tin hat.
You're back listening to The Gadget Grill on Radio 2RDJ, 88.1 on the FM band, and radio2rdj.com on the web. And now we're going to have a bit of a chat about Facebook.
We are indeed. Facebook was certainly a big story this week, along with the news that Cambridge Analytica, if you installed their app on your devices, it would ask you for permission to look at your contacts, and it would download and grab all of the information about all of your contacts without you actually approving that sort of access.
Okay, so the story is there was a researcher, what was his name? Alexander Kogan.
right? Yes.
Yes, who developed a personality quiz app in 2013. So, if you took the quiz, the way Facebook worked at the time, it, in addition to providing your personal information to the quiz, or to the quiz's developer, Kogan, it was also... like it also mined the information of your friends.
It actually did a lot more than that as well. I've seen reports of people downloading all of their Facebook data from Facebook, and you get a zip file from it. It takes about an hour for you to get the same as you can download all of your tweets from Twitter. And coming back in that information are details, all of the metadata, for all the phone calls you have made, for all the text messages, the SMS messages that you have sent. This is information that you have...
I don't think that wasn't picked up by Cambridge Analytica, though. This is a different issue.
Yes, but it's all part of the same thing, the gross invasion of your privacy that Facebook represents.
Yeah. So the bigger thing with Cambridge Analytica was... So Cambridge Analytica bought this information from this the Cambridge lecturer, which, you know, he was collecting the data. He says he was collecting the data legitimately, at least initially. But then when this data was passed on for commercial purposes, it violated the terms of, his terms of service with Facebook.
Yes.
And do you know what? When Facebook became aware of this, they just asked him to delete it. They never followed up. And so the reason this data is controversial is because this firm, Cambridge Analytica, was saying that they were able to use this information to create a micro-targeting algorithm. And they're saying that using this information, they were able to, you know, identify, you know, swing voters in the US and on Brexit and help shape the outcomes.
They targeted these people with messages that the analysts thought they would like to hear in terms of trying to persuade them to vote in a particular way at these sorts of elections, be it Brexit, be it the American federal election in 2016.
Micro-targeting isn't anything new. Like, you know, Facebook's ad platform is all based around micro-targeting. And, you know, it's hard to say whether or not what Cambridge Analytica actually did, you know, actually really did influence these elections, because, you know, it sounds like they're just trying to sell a lot of hype, you know. They're a marketing company, so they're going to, you know, talk up themselves. Yeah, it's like, you know, we were... So I'm taking it with a grain of salt, but Facebook's actions in this is the real reason many people are upset, and the fact that the data set was obtained illegally. And now, you know... there's a lot of chat about whether or not Facebook should be regulated and or semi-regulated, or whether there needs to be...
I actually saw something today where people are now suggesting that Facebook should be broken up in the same way that AT&T in America was broken up. I think it was back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is a very interesting way to go. I don't know whether it's going to happen, but Facebook... When Mark Zuckerberg came out this week with his statement about it, he didn't apologise. What he said basically was something that he said about 3 years ago, when Facebook were caught invading people's property, privacy. He said that, you know, we should be doing this better. And basically in the time since then, they've done bugger all.
You know, it is concerning, and it will, but, you know, it wasn't technically a breach, but let's call it a breach for simplicity's sake.
Yep.
It will be interesting to see what happens out of the fallout, because the stock price dropped by almost 10%.
Yes.
So that people are hurt. Well, you know, the company is hurting.
It is indeed. How about some Rolling Stones? You like Rolling Stones?
Who doesn't?
Oh, and this is some classic Stones. Paint It Black. I can remember playing this when I was 16. Great music, this.
Let's go!
And welcome back to the Gadget Grill on 2RDJ FM 88.1 on the FM band and on the internet at radio2rdj.com. This is not quite a useless gadget, but it's an interesting story anyway. Cloned meat. What do you think about the idea of having meat that has been cloned, Alex?
Are we talking clone or grown in a lab?
Well, we're probably talking a bit of both here. We're probably talking a bit of both. But one of the rules behind the Jewish kashrut law, the laws of kosher food, relates to the cleanliness of the animal from which the food comes. And in the case of the pig and the prawn and that sort of thing, that's exactly where this comes from. But if they're talking about cloned pork, then this is not meat that has come from the actual animal. And so it has been declared by an Orthodox rabbi in the UK that it would be kosher, which I think is rather interesting.
Well, I guess if it's after cleanliness, labs are pretty clean.
Well, that's exactly right. Okay, you've been listening to The Gadget Grill here on 2RDJ FM 88.1 on the FM band on the internet, www.radio2rdj.com. I'm the Professor Stumpy Steamboat Gaz.
I'm Alex Hirsch.
We'll be back next week, or I'll be back next week. You won't be here.
Yeah, I'm doing Easter things.
You're doing Easter things, fine. I think Jason will be joining me. And this is Wes Montgomery and A Day in the Life. Take care, Australia. See you next time.
Bye. Thank you.